Right now, it's time for the Talk of the Nation opinion page. Websites like YouTube turned any wannabe with a video camera and an internet connection into a full-fledged broadcaster with an audience, potentially, of millions. Those short videos of funky dancing or fuzzy kittens on pianos passed by email from inbox to inbox and, for the most part, left the mainstream media struggling to keep up. But the video publishing revolution may be over as the world of online video changes from amateur hour.
Okay, here we are, the world's best card trick. Spread the cards out, take a card, any card.
To just another tool for the pros.
Previously on Grey's Anatomy.
What's going to happen to them?
What?
Dr. Burke and Dr. Yang. Punishment.
Dr. Bailey. Legally and technically, they've done nothing wrong. Nobody died.
In yesterday's San Jose Mercury News, Scott Kirshner argued that viewers on the web want less of Ask a Ninja and more of David Letterman. The online video pendulum, he says, is swinging from quirky home videos back to professional-grade network TV quality. So, is it true? When you watch video online, do you want the often fuzzy but sometimes hilarious clips posted by part-time movie makers, or is it time to let the big kids into the online playground? Would you rather see the networks and the studios post high-quality clips and made-for-TV shows? Tell us what you're watching online and why. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. Scott Kirshner wrote the book The Future of Web Video. He's the editor of the Cinema Tech blog and joins us now from the studios of member station WBUR in Boston. Nice to have you on the program today.
It's great to be here, Neil.
So you say this is the beginning of the end for the populist revolution in online video.
You know, I do think that it is, and the pendulum swing is exactly the term that I like to use. If you look at a lot of media, when they first started out, it was really the amateurs that glommed onto it and really understood what the potential was. I kind of liken it to the early days of cinema when you had people really making these sort of aimless, pointless, very short movies. You know, one of the first movies ever shown to a paying audience was workers leaving the Lumiere factory in France, you know, literally people walking out of a factory. Another one was a gardener getting sprayed with his own hose. And I think if you look at YouTube now, you see a lot of that same kind of stuff, you know, experimentation. I actually did a little search on hose and sprayed on YouTube, and you get 50 videos of, you know, often it's a little kid in the backyard with a hose spraying his parents or spraying the family dog. And I just love that parallel to the early days of cinema. And obviously we know that movies evolved past the point of hose spraying, or maybe not if you've seen the Jackass movies recently.
Well, that's another issue, but nevertheless, so you say this is, you know, sort of a function of media in general, that every time a new medium comes up, you have what you call a tech populace saying this is finally going to free us from the dominion of the big studios.
Exactly. I mean, you know, people in Silicon Valley, where I'm living right now, love the idea that a new technology comes along or new media comes along and it's going to remake the whole competitive landscape. And suddenly amateurs are going to be on top and the professionals are going to be racing to catch up or stuck on the bottom of the pile. And we saw it really just 2 years ago with podcasting, where suddenly the technology became available to record an audio show in your kitchen and put it up on the internet and allow anyone to listen to it. And people said, suddenly, you know, someone from Kansas is going to be the next, you know, the next Howard Stern, the next Neil Conan. And now, 2 years later, if you look at the list of the most popular podcasts, you'll see a lot of familiar names in it. It's HBO and ESPN and the investing guru Jim Cramer. And I should mention NPR, too, is now on the list of, you know, top 10, top 15 most popular podcasts.
So you suggest that new users, not necessarily those early users, but new users as this starts to snowball come on, and they tend to look for brands that they're familiar with.
Yeah, I do think that's true. I mean, there haven't been a lot of familiar brands on the internet, in the world of internet video over the last year. I mean, it has been a lot of amateur content. And now, as you see CBS putting up a lot of their shows, and they'll put up segments of The Late Show with David Letterman, or ABC will put up Desperate Housewives or Lost, people know those brands and they recognize those shows. And they're thinking, well, gee, if I want to spend 2 minutes goofing off at work, am I going to download something that may or may not be funny, may or may not have a point? Or am I going to spend those 2 minutes with David Letterman when I have a pretty good chance of you know, being entertained and laughing?
And so it's not just the brand identification, though. As people get used to higher production values, they're going to trend towards that.
I do think that's true. I mean, particularly the next evolution that we're going to see with video on the internet is people being able to watch it on their TVs. So kind of making a connection between the internet video on their PC to the television set. And what we're used to watching on our televisions is very high quality material. And so I think when you have the, skateboard accident video or mm-hmm. the cute kitty taking a nap video, and it tends to be sort of lower quality, you're not going to want to watch that sitting in your living room when you've got 100 channels of really high-quality content available.
And I understand we're talking about this in a specific content, but you just described broadcast television as really high content, quality content, which well, in another context, you might want to take that back.
That's true. Production values tend to be high. You know, the camera isn't shaky. The sound isn't fuzzy. So it's high quality in that sense, not necessarily highbrow. I wouldn't describe it all that way.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can get some listeners involved in this conversation. Again, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And let's go to Andrew. Andrew calling us from Voorhees in New Jersey.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
I'm really interested in the topic that you're discussing. I've actually talked about this with my friends. I personally really enjoy watching like video podcasts that you'll find online, even more so than I don't even really watch broadcast television anymore, mainly because I think it's pretty homogenized, pretty boring, and in many cases pretty stupid. And I find that the amateur homemade video podcasts and videos that you find online, most of them can be pretty dumb, but every once in a while you'll find one that's very, very very clever, very witty, and I really enjoy watching them.
So you're willing to go for a lower batting average, but the occasional grand slam home run off the steady diet of singles and doubles you might get off mainstream media.
Yeah, I'm pretty tired of all the. I'm going to keep running with this baseball analogy. God, I'm tired of watching a bunch of ground balls and really not enjoying and really not enjoying any moment of the time I spend watching broadcast television. I really think it's gone so downhill. And every once in a while, you'll find a specific podcast or you'll find a specific person whose sense of humor really matches your own online. Mm-hmm. And whereas on regular television, they really are produced to please the widest possible audience, which mm-hmm. really means that it kind of makes it pretty boring for most people.
And Scott Kirshner, what Andrew seems to be saying is he likes these tiny little niche broadcasters.
And I think a lot of people do. I'm definitely not trying to deride the quality of a lot of what people are putting out or say that it's not going to exist. I mean, the web turns out to be a great, very democratic publishing tool, whether you want to create a blog or create a podcast or create videos. I'm just saying that I do think there's going to be a mix of content that people watch. You know, some people may watch more amateur content. Some people may watch less. It's interesting to think about what the split is today. If you think about the time you spend on the web, how much time are you spending with a site like a CNN or the New York Times or an ESPN site? And how much time are you spending, reading your friends' blogs? For most people, their friends' blogs haven't taken over 100% of their mm-hmm. web surfing. The big media companies still have a share of that. And I think the same will be true with video.
And you also raised the question, and by the way, Andrew, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
You raised the issue of the semi-professional, this sort of third category in between, CBS and Aunt Millie.
I do think the semi-professional is going to be a really interesting category. And so those are people that are making video today. Maybe they're making travel videos in Hawaii about things you can do in Hawaii, or they're making instructional yoga videos in Montana. And they really didn't, before the internet, have a way to get those videos out to the world and potentially charge money for them, potentially put advertising around them to make some money. So I think the semi-pro is going to be really interesting. And the other piece of that category is people who haven't really been video producers, but are really, really good at making amateur videos. And we've seen a lot of those come up on YouTube and sites like Revver.com. And those people, I think, will sort of fill out this semi-pro category and kind of get discovered.
And by the way, whenever we mention this site, we always get email questions. YouTube is spelled YOUTUBE, all one word, and don't go to that other website run by some plumbing company. let's get Bob in Detroit. Bob in Detroit is on the line with us.
Hi, how you going? How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that my comment was that I think the premise that amateur videos are going to go away as the pro videos come online, it doesn't make any sense. It's ridiculous. I think that the same people that were watching the amateur videos and posting the amateur videos in the first place could still go watch the pro content on MSNBC.com or just on CNN if they wanted to. And I think that as the pro stuff comes in, I don't really see a reason for anybody to stop watching or posting the amateur stuff. To compare the old days of movies with the new days, it's like saying, you know, when whatever the first stuff that came out on DVD was, that would be it, and you know, the guy with the card trick would, you know, would take over anything. I don't think anybody ever did say that.
And I don't think that Scott Kirshner is saying the amateurs are going to go away entirely either, but let him respond for himself.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you think about if you were someone who was using the web in the early days, you know, 1994, 95, 96, there weren't a lot of really well-made professional websites out there. And so you found yourself spending a lot of time visiting someone's pictures of their dog on their homemade website. Or I remember there were a lot of universities that would put up, you know, information about, you know, was the coffee pot freshly made on the fifth floor of the university, you know, computer science center. And people went to these websites because there wasn't a whole lot else available. And I think that's kind of what we've been seeing in the last year with video, is that, you know, there kind of was a vacuum of professionally created content on the web. And so a lot of people jumped to the conclusion that this is going to be a medium dominated by amateurs, and I just don't think that's going to play out long term.
Bob, thanks very much.
I don't think anybody predicted that it would be predominantly taken over or run by the amateurs. I think everybody pretty much knew it was just a matter of time before the ad dollars hit. But that's my comment. Thanks for taking my call.
That's a great comment.
All right, Bob. Thanks very much. We're talking today with Scott Kirshner, whose op-ed appeared in yesterday's San Jose Mercury News. If you'd like to read a copy to it, there's a link at our webpage. You can go to npr.org and go to the Talk of the Nation page. And remember that all of our recent Opinion Page segments can be downloaded as podcasts, and damn popular they are, too. Just stop by the Talk of the Nation page at npr.org. And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And as you get this this debate, I mean, it's not going to be all or the other, as you suggest, Scott Kirshner. It's not going to be that there are no more exploding 2-liter bottles of Diet Pepsi on the web.
No, I don't think that stuff's going to go away. And I really do think the thing that's going to be so interesting about the video landscape going forward is that you'll occasionally have that rocket out of the blue kind of hit, where someone discovers that when you drop a Mentos candy into a 2-liter bottle of Diet Coke, crazy things happen. And I think that's going to force both the big media companies to be more creative about what they put on the web and maybe less formulaic. And it's going to force, you know, the folks who are making video in their backyard or their basement to be just really clever and really funny and really unique in what they create. And I do think, you know, we've seen some examples of that. The one that I like to cite is the Jib Jab videos that people remember from the 2004 elections. And those are some of the most watched videos of all time on the internet. I think between the two of them, one was called This Land and the other was called Good to Be in D.C. About Bush and Kerry. They were both seen 80 million times or 85 million times. So that's a pretty big audience. And those were made by two, you know, wannabe animators down in L.A. who really had never had a big media connection or a big media deal before. And suddenly everyone knows the brand Jib Jab. And most people, I think, in America have seen those videos, which were kind of a genre. You know, it's like Schoolhouse Rock mixed with the Capitol Steps. You know, it was a genre, maybe mixed with a little South Park. It was a genre that no one had really ever seen before, sort of this animated political satire musical stuff.
Mm-hmm. Let's get Jeff on the line. Jeff calling from Phoenix.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that ultimately I don't think it's ever going to be the technology anymore is the issue. I mean, the technology's caught up, and it will. We're going to have better and better cameras, easier to use, better computers. It's really going to be the content. I mean, I'm a musician, and I've got a recording system that the Beatles would have killed for, but it doesn't mean I'm going to produce good music. It's going to be what's in it, the creativity and the talent that really rises to the top, whether it's considered amateur or professional.
And I think your point, Scott Kirshner, is if you add up all the degrees of talent, including all the equipment that Jeff was talking about, but also writing, acting, and videography skills, professionals have an edge.
Well,
yeah.
I do think professionals have a little bit of an edge. But, you know, I do think the thing that's so interesting about the internet is there is this door that's now open to really talented people that wasn't before. And the door is basically this free distribution channel. I mean, 10 years ago, if you said, I want to start a TV channel and I want to broadcast around the clock, that was a $100 million or $1 billion project. You know, you had to go to the FCC and get broadcasting licenses. You had to buy all this equipment. Today, you could launch a 24-hour TV channel literally for free. And so the question is kind of, what do you fill it with? Do you have something to say? And can you do something that people haven't ever seen or heard before?
Jeff, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. Before we let you go, Scott Kirshner, you tend to be arguing, it seems to me you're arguing, that this is a function of all new media and a function of that this pendulum you're talking about is sort of a social law of sorts.
I do think it's a social law that you see in effect when the technology is cheap, as the last caller was talking about. You know, it's very cheap to buy a video camera today. And when it's sort of easy and accessible to get your content out of there. We didn't see, it's interesting, in the early days of radio and the early days of TV, it wasn't an amateur-dominated medium just because, you know, as I was just saying, to buy a TV camera or to set up your radio studio in the 1920s or the 1940s and 50s for TV was really expensive and you needed to deal with lots of regulation. So you didn't see so many amateurs and hobbyists dominating those media in the early days. But with cinema, you really did. And I think that's a good example where people were inventing their own cameras and buying film from Kodak was cheap. And so you could kind of shoot anything in the early days of cinema. And people did.
Yeah, back when Kodak made film all that time ago. Scott Kirshner, thanks very much.
Oh, it was great fun.
Scott Kirshner, the author of The Future of Web Video. He edits the blog Cinema Tech, and he joined us today from the studios of our member station in Boston, WBUR. You can read his op-ed by going to our website, and remember, all of our recent opinion page segments can be downloaded as podcasts. Just stop by the Talk of the Nation page at npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.